Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Shrimad Bhagavatam 4:22-52. Griheshu, at home. Vartmanaha, being present. Api, although. Saha, King Prithu. Oh, here's a refund. Exchange. Samraja, the entire empire. Shriya, opulence. Anvita, being absorbed in. Na, never. Anusajjata, became attracted. Indriya, arteshu, for sense gratification. Nihi, nor. Aham, I am. Matahi, consideration. Arka, sun. Vat, like. Griheshu vartmanopi. Griheshu vartamanopi. Sa samrajya shriyanvita. Sa samrajya sama shriyanvita. That one here. Nasajatindriyarteshu. Nasajatindriyarteshu. Niraham matir arkavat. Molya. Griheshu vartamanopi. Sa samrajya shriyanvitaha. Nasajatindriyarteshu. Niraham matir arkavat. Griheshu vartamanopi. Sa samrajya shriyanvita. Nasajatindriyarteshu. Niraham matir arkavat. Griheshu vartamanopi. Sa samrajya shriyanvita. Nasajatindriyarteshu. Niraham matir arkavat. Griheshu vartamanopi. Sa samrajya shriyanvitaha. Nasa jatindriyarteshu. Niraham matir arkavat. Maharaji? A lot of Jews. Griheshu vartamanopi. Sa samrajya shriyanvitaha. Nasajatindriyarteshu. Niraham matirarkavat. Translation. Maharaj Prithu, who was very opulent due to the prosperity of his entire empire, remained at home as a householder. Since he was never inclined to utilize his opulence for the gratification of his senses, he remained unattached, exactly like the sun, which is unaffected in all circumstances. Purport to Bhāṣya Prabhupāda. The word griheshu is significant in this verse. out of the four ashrams, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, only a grihastha, or householder, is allowed to associate with women. Therefore, the grihastha ashram is a kind of license for sense gratification given to the devotee. Prithvi Maharaj was special in that although he was given license to remain a householder, and although he possessed immense opulence in his kingdom, he never engaged in sense gratification. This was a special sign that indicated him to be a pure devotee of the Lord. A pure devotee of the Lord. A pure devotee is never attracted by sense gratification, and consequently he is liberated. In material life, a person engages in sense gratification for his own personal satisfaction. But in the devotional or liberated life, one aims to satisfy the senses of Krishna. In this verse, Maharaj Prithu is likened to the sun, Arkavat. So here's the second word. First word is Griheshu, and the second one is Arkavat. Sometimes the sun shines on stool, urine, and so many other polluted things. But since the sun is all-powerful, it is never affected by the polluted things with which it associates. On the contrary, the sunshine sterilizes and purifies polluted and dirty places. Similarly, a devotee may engage in so many material activities, but because he has no desire for sense gratification, no desires, they never affect him. On the contrary, he dovetails all material activities with the service of the Lord. Since a pure devotee knows how to utilize everything for the service of the Lord, he is never affected by material activities. Instead, by his transcendental plans, he purifies his activities. This is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sarvapadi Vinir Muktam Tat Parat Vina Nirmalam. His aim is to become completely purified in service of the Lord without being affected by material designations. That's all. Baba Ji, any comments, questions? It's all clear? Yes, sir.
One place I've been, I'm not sure if this is correct or not, but some place brought up is describing two devotees, and I think maybe it was Amrish Maharaj. And he was saying that how Amrish Maharaj is more advanced. Both are pretty good, but Amrish Maharaj was considered more advanced because he was a king and a householder, and he was entangled so much, yet at the same time,
Yeah, and Jayananda one time was talking about that. He was talking about the problem comparing Bhishmadeva and Vyasadeva. Yeah. Because Vyasadeva was renounced in the Himalaya Mountains, didn't comb his hair like that. Austere. When the princesses saw him, they were shocked, they turned white. Because he had like maggots in his hair and stuff like that, and didn't brush his teeth and everything. It's like, you know, they're supposed to combine with him to have children. They were like, shocked. Used to having perfumed beds and different nice pretty clothes and ponies and stuff like that. So he wasn't, you know, he wasn't engaged in sense gratification. But Bhishma Dev was right in the midst of all this opulence, politics, prestige, fame, and he was, you know, still unaffected. So we can understand that Bhishma Dev was a pure devotee, I was saying here. That's a symptom. A pure devotee is not interested in sense gratification. Yeah, so we never gratify our senses. See, if you haven't got questions, I got questions. See, you think, we never gratify our senses. You do? Yeah. Why is that? Huh?
The same quality as Krishna, we have wanting your.
But I guess we're not the same quality as Krishna. Yeah, we're Satchitananda, but we don't create universes. There are 64 qualities. And 50 of them, we have the same. So I guess generally, we're the same, but there's like specific qualities we don't have. You know, qualitatively, we aren't. Krishna has the quality, 64 qualities, right? And you know, 50 of those we can have. But then there's like, he also creates universes, you know, on like that, which we do, you know, we can't have. And also, we can't be the supreme enjoyer. We can't be independent enjoyer.
That's what I'm saying, so we enjoy after Krishna,
Or relationship to Krishna.
But Krishna, Krishna creates again, like Hal, or Hal's doing something bizarre, so you trying to pull this television, pull some tape recorder apart or something like that, or some CD player, so you shake something in front of him, confuse him, and he starts playing with that. So we're with Krishna, but we're doing this deviant mentality, so it kind of shakes the material world in front of us, and then we can expand our demoniac desires, better, right, in the material world, because we can't see the connection of the material world with Krishna. Can't see that, so therefore we can have our impression that I'm God. And of course, that means intelligence, mind, and senses. That's the most, sense objects, even worse. But somehow or other, we're identifying with these things. So, Prabhupada says the senses are like, we have to gratify the senses or they won't work. It's like you have to have a certain amount of salt. So, there has to be a certain amount of sense gratification for the senses. What does gratification mean? Gratification. What does gratis mean? Gratis. Gratis.
Gratis or gratis?
What does gratis mean?
Gratis.
Free. Free, no charge. So gratification means paying, like that. So you have to pay these things, rascals, or they won't work. Little food, but what's our purpose? Oh, we want them to work for Krishna, So then we're not actually gratifying the senses directly. It's a very subtle point. What we're doing is we're gratifying the senses exactly what they need in terms of serving Krishna. So we see our senses, we're thinking about, how they can serve Krishna. So they become then, transparent, media to Krishna. We're on the Brajmana Parikrama. You go into Brajmana Parikrama, I don't know how it was last year, but a few years before that, they worked out a good arrangement for cooking. They were collecting all across the U.S. for money for Bhog Prasad. So they had, it wasn't really like very like rich food, it was very nice, One Lakshmana, she came from Spain and she said, wow, it's like having two Sunday feasts every day. Everything was like, breakfast was like utma and this and that. It was like a king's breakfast and king's dinner and sprouts and dal and all these chapatis. And it was like, wow. So, especially devotees from like a little bit more economically not quite so strong countries are coming there. Wow, what a deal. $100, you could eat good. So you're eating, and of course you're walking so hard and so much stress on your body and, your cooling system and your locomotion system. And so your body can't handle it, So what does it do? It just opens up the water supply and just, flushes everything out. So that's what diarrhea is. Usually diarrhea is just that. It's the body's reacting by trying to like eliminate everything. Something wrong with it. So your body is saying, hey, look, I can run the locomotion system, and the cooling system at this pressure, or I can run the digestive system with all this food, but I can't do both, So make up your mind. And until you make your mind up, I'm just going to dump everything out, So, okay, So that if you don't eat enough, then you can't work, It's a hard work, So you have to eat. So then you start eating like, just the right things that you can digest to give you the proper energy and, So there's another devotee from Spain, actually from Peru, Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, I'm eating half as much as I ever ate in my life and I have just as much energy. Like that. So this is sadhana bhakti. It's very good to understand what is this machine? How does it work? You understand this is a machine. And so then, I'm gratifying my senses. But only in terms of my service. Right? Purely, very finely. So then what do I think of when I see my senses? They're not my senses, they're Krishna's senses. I just use them for Krishna. Like that. So maybe again, some man has authority over his wife. Like that. So he buys a car or something, He has a car, but his wife has to also go to work, so like that. Okay, so he buys a car, So it's like, it's his wife's car, but it's his car, or something like that, in this sense, you see. So he thinks, these are, for Krishna's service. So you don't no longer think of it as your car or your senses. You think of it as Krishna's. You think that way, it's a Krishna's senses. Supposed to use for him. And I'm just in charge of them, making sure they're working properly. Yeah. So we engage in sense gratification. We have to gratify our senses. Very important point. Yeah. We have to gratify them, and very expertly. Right? There's nobody who can gratify his senses more expertly than a devotee. Right? Yeah. But what purpose? You know, for serving Krishna. Yeah. Vishnu Priya. Did she take sannyas? Was she a sannyasi? No? She was a sannyasi. Very yesterday, the definition of sannyas. Yeah. But she didn't take the formal vows or anything like that. Lord Chaitanya was traveling all over the world preaching the glories of the Lord, the holy names. And she did the same thing. So what did she do? What was her austerity? How did she preach the glories of the holy name? Yeah. Vishnu Priya. Yeah. He took sannyas, but she also took sannyas. Not as a formality, but as a fact. So what was she doing? Yeah, every Maha Mantra she chant. That's her drop a bag. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram Hare, Ram 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 Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Ram. Until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I've read. And then whatever rice she had, so that means if she chanted 16 rounds, how many grains of rice did she have? Huh? No, one grain. I thought I heard from each mantra, each round, but then I read it. No, it was one grain for each mantra. Okay, so how many?
1728.
Yeah. 1,728 grains of rice. Yeah. But if you start counting them out, adding them up, isn't that much. You know, it's like, yeah. And, you know, well, you can do that for a couple of days, but, you know, day in, day out, you know. And so she would chant on. So she said she was always skinny, like the waning moon. And, you know, her eyes were always full of tears and everything else like that and so on. So she was just as good a preacher as her husband, you know, but doing it the same way, doing it according to her mode and position like that. You know. So she wasn't, you know, she was taking what she needed. You know, she was using her senses and, you know, to chant the holy names. You know. Okay, one, you know, so I guess really doing nothing else, but every Maha Mantra, if you're chanting properly, you earn one grain of rice like that. There he goes, one grain of rice.
Yeah.
Huh? Can't do that. But she wasn't doing anything else. She wasn't running around taking care of kids. She wasn't going to school. You know, she wasn't playing football, baseball. You know, she was just sitting, chanting, and that was it. You know, and that's okay. It's, you know, bona fide service also. You know. He probably didn't recommend it for most of us, but one time one devotee was, you know, really asking, he probably said, all right, you can chant it. You can chant, what was that? It was 163 rounds a day. It was one round less than Hari Das Thakur was chanting like that, but no more, you know. But he said, but no sleeping in the name of chanting. You know, he said, oh, no, you're chanting, seriously. So it's hard work. Actually, it's harder work to chant than it is to, you know, to just to do something, let your mind space out. You know, controlling your mind is hard work. Yeah. Whereas you just, it's easy just to do something, let your mind think about things, enjoy things. Andy Rooney did a whole investigation one time, famous journalist, on why people work. And so many people just do dull jobs every day. You know, they you know, tie their shoes together and put them in the box. Tie their shoes together and put them in the box. They do that, like, you know, all day long. You know. Huh? Yeah, see, they work, you know, put a sticker on them, you know. So then they, you know, he was asking them why they do it. And they said, well, because, you know, many times, like, their family life, their home life was kind of disturbing. They weren't so happy at the home. So they got a chance to just go someplace. And they said they could just do this and get paid, and they could think about whatever they wanted to think about. Yeah? So you're just doing this, yeah, but you're thinking about this, thinking about that, thinking about this, thinking about that. You know? So it's easy to engage the senses in some ways, but it's harder to keep the mind engaged fully, you know, like that. You know? So a devotee doesn't, he's not inclined to sense gratification because he's not inclined to, which is more subtle than sense gratification, which we're talking about right now, mental. Speculation. What is mental speculation? See, you have no questions. I have a lot of questions here. What is mental speculation? I only figured this out, as far as I can tell, like about 1 year ago. I was always saying mental speculation. What is mental speculation? Maybe you're more intelligent.
Making friends.
Ah, yeah, it's one thing. Algebra. Is algebra mental speculation? Okay, yeah. Calculus? Yeah, right? There's so many ways about, you know, usually it means linear thought. seeing the Paramatma as a line. You know, time is a line, the Paramatma. That's why not our relationship. He's not here now with us. He's like, you know, past and future. And the more we're in the mode of, more in the mode of passion, I think the more we're thinking about, we're speculating like that. You know, in the mode of passion, we're maybe thinking about, like it'll be good. It will be good, right? Yeah. In the mode of ignorance, we're thinking.
Lamenting on the past.
Yeah, usually, yeah. So we're not here. Either, you know, you're eating something in the feast, you're looking at something else, and think, wow, that'll be good. You know, oh, I'm going to be sick. Oh, yeah. So hankering and lamenting. And then you're not here now. In the mode of goodness? Yeah, you're here now. Yeah. And the more we're in the mode of goodness, the more the past and the future, you know, becomes simply related to what's actually happening now. You know, I don't have to worry about the future because I'm creating it. Yeah? I don't have to worry about the past because it's here right now. Whatever we have is here, like that. Yeah? Yeah? Mode of goodness. This is sannyasi, paramatma. Then you can see Krishna. Yeah. And then you can learn to love him. Learn to love him. Yeah. So, this is, you know, so if we give up mental speculation, boy, that's tough. It's even more difficult because the mind just loves to speculate, no? Making plans and, you know, he said this and she said that and I heard this and I'm going to do this and then that and after that I'm going to go shopping and then I'm going to do this and that and my job, my stock options and then, yeah. No? It goes on and on like that, you know. You're trying to stop it and boy, the mind just goes crazy, you know. Yeah? So then you go to the next mode, which is meditation. In meditation, you're outside, there's no time factor. Yeah. At least the time factor becomes all here right now. What is a yantra? Is a yantra? What is a yantra?
Kind of.
Yeah, as far as I understand, a yantra can be a sculpture. And yeah, the Meru yantra is a sculpture, you know, three-dimensional sculpture. Or it can be a diagram, yeah. Or it can be a way of organizing our thoughts, like that. Or on the other hand, it can be a machine. Yantra can be a machine, sculpture, diagram, or an algorithm. Right? But algorithm is the way we use them in computer science. Is called an algorithm, a series of things like that. But it's like it's linear in linear time, right? So time is a line; it goes one direction. Every step is just the same size, you know, very German view of the Paramatma. You know. And I am as a controller of time. I will dominate time. You know. And, yeah? But a yantra is all here right now. You know any yantras? You know any? Yeah. Nishinga yantra is a triangle. That's what Nishinga day is. Yantra for Lakshmi, a yantra for, you know, Shri yantra. And I mean, somehow or other, I saw a book on yantras. Mantras or yantras? It was on mantras, I think. And the guy had this oscilloscope pattern. You know, this little round screen with these little things on it like that. It's called an oscilloscope. So somehow or other, I don't know how he did it, but just kind of didn't mention it, but just had it in there by chanting the Bija mantra for Lakshmi, which is hring, hring, hring. By chanting this Bija mantra for Lakshmi, he got this pattern to appear in the oscilloscope like that, the Lakshmi Yantra. It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. So if you're actually resonating it properly, then you'll get the yantra, which matches up with it. You know, even before they had oscilloscopes, they were doing this with standing wave patterns. They would take like a very thin metal rod and weld a very thin metal plate to it, put some fine sand on top, and then draw a violin bowstring across it like that. And the sand would go in the different patterns like that. Oh, interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So, it's not just ethics and morality, right, we're talking about. We're talking about a superior science like that. Yeah? And so by sound and everything else, and you can create patterns. And well, it's supposed to be a visual representation, as far as I can, a visual representation in terms of these, some aspect of reality, you know, in terms of the mantra, you know, the Bija mantra. Yeah. So the Nrisimhadeva, the Shringa yantra is one triangle, then another triangle the opposite, you know. So you get a six-pointed star, okay. Now each of those triangles, you then do the same thing, so you get six-pointed star inside of each one like that. And it's made, if you look at it, then there's 108 lines in the thing. Things like that. I mean, there's so many, for us middle speculators and guys, there's so many interesting things to investigate, like, you know, why is it 108 lines, and what's the relationship like that? I showed this to one guy who was from a Tibetan tradition, because you know, he was, you know, it was Dr. Ajari, a real strange history. It was like so fantastic, you wondered if it was true or not. And part of it was he'd been like in Tibet as like an Acharya with his tribal people and so on, his nation, community. So I showed him the Srimi Yantra and said, Dr. Ajari, what is this? He said, oh, that's the yantra for the lion-visaged Dakini. So he said, that means Nishringadev. Yeah. So he had all these different, you know, his tantric things about the deities. And he said, oh, Balaram and Jagannath, Balaram and Krishna and Subhadra. He said, yes, in the past many people have worshipped her to conquer over demoniac governments. Like that. And, oh, wow. It is. Yeah. So anyway, these yantras, you know, it comes down to this point of a machine, a sculptor, a diagram, or a way of organizing your thoughts. But it's not progressive, but it's not linearly progressive. You're not going anywhere. You're just right here, right now, like that. And it's very difficult to give up this in a progressive linear thinking, because I can be God, right? I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Or it probably means material life means desiring to suffer and desiring to enjoy. You have to enjoy for some time, then you want to suffer, you know, salty, sweet, hot, cold. So then we think, you start lamenting, oh, this happened to me, and that happened to me, and this happened to me, and that, you know. So to escape from linear time, you know, to leave it means to give up this, you know, this ability to be God in this world. So it's very difficult. So come back to the yantra, and then we're just here now. Just be here now, right? You know, chant the mantra, Ram, it's the mantra, Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna. Yeah. So we have to, you know, be conscious of the whole mantra at one time. And then, of course, it has a certain, you know, form, nama, rupa. And the form of the mantra is going to be in the form of a yantra. You know? So there should also, though, theoretically be in Radha Krishna Mahayantra. Right? Well, there it is. Yeah? This form, right, you know, is our yantra. Every technique is there, instead of Astanga Yoga. You know, we're tantrics. No? Yes? No? Question, are we tantrics?
Yeah, because the mantra.
Yeah, we're tantrics. But tantra usually refers to left-handed tantra, right? There's left-handed magic, black magic, and there's white right-handed magic, right? And the tantrics of the dark side is Durga. And the tantrics of the white witch is Radharani. Yeah, neck. This is magic, right? This is tantra. You know, wearing neck beads, putting on tilak. This is all magic, tantra technique. You know, so we're tantrics, but we're like, you know, what do you call it? You know, trying to we call it support whatever the bright side of the force. You know. The white side of the force, like that. Yeah. So it's all these things are very important. They have different mentalities. You know, some people are very tantric. Okay, so they hear these things, they just wake up. You know, I know one devotee. He was a physicist. He was coming to the temple, you know, visiting sometimes. He just didn't like it. It was too sentimental, this and that. You know. So then he was kind of like at home, and his roommate came. He said, "Oh, there's a sannyasi. It was me. He's really talking about all this Krishna consciousness, really scientifically. I don't know. It's kind of like far out, but I think you'd like it. You know." So he kind of like opened up his Bhagavatam, read a little bit. Next day he went to the temple and he said, you know, he told me this years later, and he said, that was what, you know, made him realize Krishna consciousness in terms of his own mode of thinking, his own lifestyle. Then he became a devotee, took initiation. So for some people they like this. Other people like recipes, cooking, especially the deities, yeah. So I like some science. So this is what tantrics. We're following a whole scientific process, you know, by chanting Hare Krishna, you know. And to do that, the ultimate problem is ahankara, this false ego. If it's time, linear time, you know, progressive German time especially, then boy, I can be the controller, I can be the master, I can, you know, the past, the future, you know, all these things like that. I can extend my ego and get involved in this world, you know. Like that. But then to take it back up and just be here now, that's very difficult, you know, because then I have no ego, you know. The time of death, they take away your clothes, yes. They take away your nose, your ears, your tongue, your eyes, your skin. If you're used to taking cold showers and things like that, then you can, okay, my skin, you can have it. You know, I already detached from that. But they also take away the air like that. Oh, yeah. Are you ready to sacrifice your breathing? A little while more, okay. But this is still material. Yeah. So it probably says we have to give up life breathing. Right? You have to give up life breathing. You know, you start to get your air from the Maha Mantra. Wow, you're not taking it from that. We don't know how. Then above air is what? You know, earth, water, fire, air, and then what?
Space.
Space. Yeah, you take away your space. You know. Hey, they took away my space, man. Hey. You know. Yeah. And then above that? Yeah, thinking, your thoughts, you know. What does Hamlet say? Anybody, yeah, you're Hamlet? What's the most famous phrase in the English language? Shakespeare. Yeah, everybody knows this. To be or not to be, that is the question. To take arms against a sea of Kauravas, yeah? And by opposing in them, or to die, to sleep. This is an identical problem facing Arjuna, you know, yeah. Identical, so close, you can tell the story both ways and people think it's either Prince, Arjuna or Hamlet. So take his arms against a sea of Kauravas, to fight with them, to kill them, to die, you know, or, just to die, you know, to have peace, you know, to finish it all off like that. He's thinking like that, you know. But then he says, but who knows what dreams may come, right? We got rid of time, space, and everything else. Who knows what dreams may come? After we have shuffled off this mortal coil, gives pause to reflection, and the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with a paler cast of thought. For who would fartles bear? What are fartles? You don't know, it's just English language. Fartles are also faggots. Right? Faggots in modern English means homosexual. So burning faggots. Faggots are like pieces of wood, like from the tree, you take the small branches and stuff like that and tie them into a bundle. You see people like that, they collect like small branches and tie them into a bundle, okay. So these people are burying faggots or burying fartles like that. You know. Who would fartles bear? Or suffer the proud man's contumely fall down. You know, some big guy has some big fall down, then he's so humiliated. Who would suffer these things, having to make your money carrying these things and suffering embarrassment like that? But with a bare bodkin. What's a bodkin? Yeah, and this little sword. But with a bare bodkin, his own quietus he could make. You would suffer all these problems, you just kill yourself, you know, when these things happen. With this little sword, you know. Yeah. He said, but the problem is because, you know, you don't know. After you die, you know, I'm not going to be free from it all. My thoughts go with me. He said, I would count myself king of infinite space, bound up in a nutshell, if only I did not have bad dreams. So we're going up here, right? Giving up the air, taking up the space. You don't know how attached you are to space. You know? And then we go to the middle level, and giving up our thoughts, you know, because Hamlet said you can sacrifice space, you can live in a nutshell, a peanut, like that, if you didn't have bad thoughts, you know. So some people are like this, you know. So the thoughts are more tough, right? You know, trying to get sense gratification here, like Maharaj Prithu, never engage in satisfying our senses for our own vanity, just use them for Krishna's service. Prabodhananda Saraswati in the Vrajamana Parikrama, was a book, Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita. He says, treat your senses roughly, right? Treat your senses roughly. Shove them in the shower, pull them out, wash them off. Make them get up, go do their job, you know, do your work like that, you know? Yeah. And usually at the end of the day, they'll probably be quite happy. You put them alive. It's like a donkey. make him work. You know, at the end of the day, he just feels happy, healthy, you know, like that. You know? So then after that, though, comes the mind. And then Prabhupada's always talking about mental speculation. And that's this thinking process. You know, we love to form thoughts in different ways and put them together and just like that, and this is going to happen, that's going to happen. You know, there's one conference in every year in somewhere on the East Coast, and it's organized by some big university. And they get permission from the Nobel Society to organize it. It's the Nobel Conference on Aesthetics. And I read the proceedings one time. And they invite different Nobel laureates to come and talk about aesthetics, you know, beauty. And it's kind of strange, these big scientists, you know. But it's amazing how many things they have to say about beauty and symmetry, you know. And many of them, they have this very sophisticated idea of, you know, of beauty in these things. And one Chinese Nobel laureate, he's talking about the almost inconceivable pleasures of the mind, like that. You know, these guys don't eat. Many times they're very austere people. Their lifestyle very simple. But they're enjoying this, like, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta's Garbhatar called it eating the bananas of the mind. Eating the bananas of the mind, like that. In the Buddhists, this is what the Buddhists many times they fall into, you know. Because they're austere in the material world, but they get into the psychological level, you know. I always mention this. One Buddhist came to our university. And it was in Freeborn Hall. It was the biggest hall in the university, you know, for dances and performances. It was big, you know. So it was full, maybe like about, I don't know, 600 people in there, 700 people like that, all came to listen to this guy. And he gave his whole lecture, and I was listening, you know. It was pretty good about this material world like that. But he finally came to this point. He finally said, so, God is a circle with its center everywhere and no circumference. Yeah, try and think about that. Yeah. So I was trying to think about it for 2 or 3 days. I hadn't become a devotee yet. And then, you know, trying different things, you know, stuff like that. And so finally my dog saved me like that. He was down to earth guy like that, smelling things and stuff, you know. But it was just like, yeah, it's a fantastic thought. You just go on with these kind of, you know, Zen koans, right? These Zen koans, same things. What's the most famous Zen koan? You know, Zen Buddhism is in Japan. They have these things also, you know, very popular. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Right? That's the most famous one like that. What is the sound of one hand clapping? You're supposed to meditate on that, you know. So it's the same thing. It's probably a koan with a, you know, circle everywhere. But the idea is that, you know, you can enjoy this mental speculation beyond belief. Prabhupada says the Buddhists say the material world's false, but they're the most expert at enjoying it, like that. They have such pleasures, these Buddhist monks and things. They make these sand paintings. It's incredible, you know, colors like that and everything else. And then you're enjoying it, it's becoming a reality, and then you destroy the whole thing, you know. So it remains a subtle psychological pleasure like that. You know Pingala? Pingala. Yeah, what's her profession?
She's a prostitute.
Oh, okay. Where does she appear in Srimad Bhagavatam? No. 10th or 11th? Maybe it's 8th? It's the Bhumigita. I think it's 10th or 11th. I think so. Bhumigita. Maybe 8th. Yeah. But what is her explanation of what is the highest satisfaction, material satisfaction? She tells that. Yeah? Huh? No. Yeah. Frustration. Right? It's the highest material satisfaction. Yeah. Because you're thinking about having something, you don't get it, and that's the highest material satisfaction. If you actually get it, then everybody realizes that you're not happy. Boy, you want to eat that ice cream, like that, it's hot, you haven't eaten, and as soon as you eat it, when you have to eat it, then you feel, you know. Goethe, famous author, he said, in desire, I lack all satisfaction, but in satisfaction, I lack all desire. So your desire is gone, you feel contaminated, so on. So she said frustration is the highest material gratification. Thinking about this, thinking about that, but never quite getting it. So you always can be relishing it in the subtle platform, you know. And that's what happens. So that's why we stay in the material world to some degree, right? Yeah. So this is different levels. Maharaj Prithu, describing here, he was a very unusual person because he could stay in this Grihastha ashram. And, you know, it's a Bengali phrase, men are like gasoline. Changed a little bit here. Men are like gasoline and women are like fire. Right? It's a great combination. It's dangerous. Dangerous. You have some little flame, you knock over a 40-gallon drum of gasoline. You know, I mean, I it's just like, you know, I would be out the door, you know, like that, everybody. You know, it's going to explode and blow the whole room to pieces like that, you know. But if you combine them together in an automobile engine, right, you have a pump to bring it up in just the right quantity, it goes to an atomizer to turn it into a fine mist, it goes into a very big controlled steel, you know, container, and then the other side, the electricity comes up, it goes to a coil, so it's increased in intensity, it goes to a capacitor to charge it up, then the fire, that comes as one little spark, like that, okay, and the gasoline and the mist goes, explodes, right, and it's very nice, produce automobiles. So it's a Grihastha ashram, right, and only in that condition, you know, brahmachari, and you know, a girl's trained to be a very faithful follower of her husband, boy's trained to be a very chaste, very austere person like that. So Prabhupada says, this is a very good combination for spiritual advancement. A chaste girl and a boy trained in brahmacharya. Because they live together then, you know. You can't become king unless you're married. You can't do it. You know? Because why? There's no inspiration. You know. So when the court is there, Ram has to be there with Sita. You know? And then together they can relate to things properly and get proper judgments and guide society. But they can't do it independently. You know? So when the Grihastha ashram is a very, very, you know, good position in this progress in spiritual life. But use the idea, what's the purpose of Grihastha ashram? Grihastha ashram is for coming to Vanaprastha, right? At past 50 years old, use the idea is to retire from these things, you know? From all this competition and big money and kids are grown up, you say, you kick them out the door, you know? Yeah. See you later. Come back in a year or two. We'll visit you next year. You're on your own. Well, I don't know. Don't worry, you can do it. He's flying. You know. Wow, you know. I guess most of the birds fly. I guess some of them figure out they can fly. I remember I grew up and I was the last kid. They were like had the last 3 years of government service. So they were amazing me. So they said, okay, you know, they got a contract in government service in Saudi Arabia, you know. And so, you know, you could go to Arabia and work and stay there, you know. So I was just going to college and stuff, and suddenly on my own. I remember it was like, you know, frightening thing and this and that. And actually what happened was I came back down to realizing that God takes care of everybody, you know. He takes care of the animals, so he's going to take care of me too. Okay, you know, then I went ahead like that. Yeah. So, 50 young, Grihastha ashram is for coming to Vanaprastha. You're trying out this hypothesis, me Tarzan, you Jane, okay, him Cheetah, you know. And are you Tarzan? Are you Jane? No, it didn't work, you know. Or, you know, Devahuti and Kardava Muni. That's a perfect example in the third canto. And they both were inclined to believe we can enjoy. You know, but they tried it out. But they also thought, well, it seems that maybe we can't. The Vedas say we can't. Let's try it out. And they had one fantastic sense gratification, you know, in the third canto. So at that point, they both became convinced. Can't do it. You know. And then he took sannyas. And then she had one Bhagavatam class from her son, who was God. One class. It was enough. And she was completely, you know, they both achieved perfection. You know. So they're a nice example of you know, of Varna ashram. You have Brahmachari, Brahmacharini, Grihastha, and then there was no Vanaprastha. They went straight to sannyas. Like that. Yeah. So everything's there in the Bhagavatam for everybody, the social situation like that. Yeah. And then, what? You know, it's just a Vanaprastha for coming to. Yeah. Yeah, but reading Prabhupada, though, it's like he seems to be saying that really Vanaprastha is enough. In the Kali Yuga, in the current situation, kind of like, yes, sannyas, you know, civil widow, this is really good, but it's,
kind of difficult, rare in a Kali Yuga. So if you're chanting Hare Krishna, you know, and you're engaging everything, then probably, you know, Vanaprastha Ashram is sufficient like that. Then you find, maybe you sell everything, you get a little, you know, a little room and, you know, some, you know, ashram. I remember like a Krishna Balaram temple, there's the main road, and then, you know, past the parking lot, there's a little road down the side, you go to the Gaurashala, and right on the other side of the road is one small ashram there. So we always are staying there, and you go inside, there's a little courtyard, it's two stories, and then they have different rooms. And one couple, they were renting one little living room, then a small kitchen, small bathroom, and a bedroom. And that was it. You know, Lena, she's one Russian girl, a devotee. And very nice, you know, simple, married. So I was telling her what I have as a sannyasi. I have like two bags, and one of them is the library. And she was going, wow, if I had that few things, I would go crazy. So natural for a lady, she identifies with more things, you know, clothes, house, family. It's just natural, you know, like that. So to live in a situation like that, we got one bedroom, one living room, little kitchen, and little bathroom. And as part of other people, it's just like, for a lady, it's like, you know, austere, yeah? Difficult usually, yeah? So this, you know, this is a vanaprast. And Prabhupada's saying, usually it's sufficient, you know? Usually it's sufficient to live in a simple situation like that. And chant Hare Krishna, and do a lot of service in the temple, help people, guide them, you know? So, any questions? Or comments? Yes, sir. Do you still have?
Sati body, like in the speech.
No.
Body.
No. Yeah, it's also, you know, a covering. Yeah. Yeah. There is only the intentional body.
The high spiritual senses.
Yeah, they manifest. But there we are, the body. This is, again, like, you know, you get a shirt because you have, your body has arms. You know, if you're going down the street sometime, you see a clothing store, you look inside and there's, all they have is shirts with four arms. And you're like, wait a second, where am I? Like that. You know? Yeah. Like that. Or, and then you realize, oh, this is a pet store. Oh, okay, these are clothes for dogs. Okay. You see these little dogs, they have like different blankets and stuff for them, like you can get them, because it's cold, so like, dogs sometimes, they haven't got proper fur and stuff, so they sell clothes for dogs, you know. You know. Yeah. So this body has senses because we have senses. And on the basis of that, it's like expanding. Yeah. But you know, we are the body and the spiritual platform. I don't know. Spiritual mind and intelligence. I don't understand exactly, you know, how it's working on the spiritual platform. Yeah.
Isn't it that your body is made of consciousness?
Yeah, it's sat, your body is sat. Body is sat, sat chit. Well, see, these are the categories. Just like one substance has three categories. Those three categories are ice, water, and steam, but all of them are the same substance. You know, so our body, you know, has three categories. You know, sat, chit, and ananda. Yeah. That's in general. But you can be a blade of grass and bring Dhamma also. Yeah, but a very nice blade of grass. Like that. Yeah. That's, you know. Yeah, people are happy to be blades of grass and bring Dhamma. Oh, this is it. Wow. The drama. Yeah. So Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna Maha Mantra ki. Sunday feast ki. Sunday festival. I was a boy, you know.